Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning. Welcome in to 106.7 The Fan on this Sunday to an unnamed show. Cakes, Dukes, they had a cool name. We don't have a cool name.
We don't.
Alongside Eric Bickle, I'm Grant Paulson. Maybe we could work on that, EB, if we're going to be doing this Sunday shift from 9 to noon. We need something, don't we?
Is this going to be our new bit?
It seems that way.
I was thinking it was maybe a one-off.
I think a few of us were thinking that, but I don't know. You tell me. You've been in on the coronavirus before. It was cool to be worried about the coronavirus.
Correct.
I don't know that anything's changing in the next few weeks, so I don't know why this would be a one-off.
Yeah, I don't think anything is. And I want to say, first of all, shout out to all the guys. Like, I know Lavero's missing coming on the air. I'm sure Nick Ashew, all those guys that, you know, Pete. I feel for those guys because, look, I'd rather just be doing whatever. But actually doing the show and broadcasting and touching the people a little bit, it's kind of therapeutic. It helps you get through the day. I actually look forward to it, to be honest with you. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I do, absolutely, yeah. And it also gives you just a benchmark in your day, right?
Yeah.
So there was a time years and years ago I was reading a book about the life of, I think it was Warner Wolf. It was Let's Go to the Videotape.
Yeah.
And he said basically after he retired, for a year or so, he was just so bad at it. Like he was retired, right. But he was kind of depressed and didn't know what he was doing, so he had to schedule something every single day.
Right.
It's like Monday he would play golf, Tuesday he would play tennis, Wednesday he would, and it was just something kind of random, but he had to set an appointment each day at a certain time just so he had something to kind of look forward to, something to wake up for. Well, for me, if not for the radio shows right now, I'm just kind of wandering around my house twiddling my thumbs. I mean, there's really nothing to do.
I've done so much sleeping.
Yeah.
Because I'm staying up late because I'm getting this weird second wind and then doing the show early. And then I'm just falling asleep. I did get through Tiger King, which it seems like the entire world is watching.
But I watched three episodes last night. I've got five more to go.
It took me probably 4 or 5 days to do it because I kept falling asleep in the middle of it. Not that it wasn't terrible. I mean, it was fine. I mean, there's definitely there's some of the most interesting, weird people in the world. But, you know, it's just, I felt like it dragged on a little bit, and so it just would put me to sleep every day. But I finally did get through it. Entertaining. I'm now on season 3 of Ozark. Obviously, I was a huge fan of that when that came out. But yeah, all I'm doing is like laying on the couch. I'm trying to go for a run every day, trying to work out a little bit in the basement. Are you getting any exercise in, GP?
So that's the big issue. Is the easy answer would be not enough, Eric Bickle. Here's what I am.
Get that heart rate going, brother.
I know. So we've got, as you know, a 1-year-old baby as of this week.
Yeah.
And so we take the baby on walks in the stroller around the neighborhood every single day at least once, and that's a little over a mile.
Yeah.
But that's probably not good enough, big picture. You know, that's I am more less sedentary than I was previously, though. In my normal life pre-COVID-19, I would go to the studio. I'd be sitting there with Dar and Thom and Danny,
right,
kind of previewing the show by 9 a.m. I wouldn't really do much other than sit around, occasionally walk to the kitchen or whatever until 2 o'clock. So I'm getting home at like 2:30, 2:45, having taken, you know, like 1,800 steps or something egregious like that. Then I would drive straight to NBC Sports Washington to get ready for a Caps game like 4 days a week. And we're sitting around planning that. We're sitting around watching a game. So your boy just didn't do much anyway. I'm way more active right now because I'm doing a bunch of stuff around my house. I told you, we're actually trying to sell my house, which is an awesome time to do that.
I can't imagine. I mean, literally, maybe 9/11 would be a worse time to sell your house. This is right up there with it.
Well, at least we bought a house.
Who's going to come through?
At least we bought a house at the top of our price range about 2 weeks before COVID-19 started. So that was fun for everyone. But yeah, man, so based on that, like moving stuff around, lifting
up. So that's exercise.
Absolutely. That's the natural exercise that I'm getting. But just from not even an exercise or a food standpoint, I'm not eating great. It's the least healthy I've been in a while in the sense of, like you said, I'm staying up later than ever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm my schedule is all out of whack. I'm watching and binging TV until like 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's just so weird. And you don't even know what day it is. I almost need, like, are you with me on this? These movies where people get deserted on islands and stuff.
Yeah.
They, like, try to keep track of what day it is with, a marker on a wall or something.
Yeah.
Like, you can't possibly know in your head right now that it's Sunday. You're on the air at 9:08 in the morning. You're doing the same thing tomorrow that you did today than yesterday. It's the weirdest thing in the world.
Yeah, I don't even look at my calendar. I mean, I really don't. It's the most bizarre thing. And what's so scary about it is I don't know where the relief is. I don't know when we're going to get
when it's coming.
Yeah, and I don't know when we're going to get some sort of sense of normalcy. And I keep trying to tell my kids because they're asking every day. I just don't have the answer. And then, you know, when Kirk Herbstreit verbalized the other day, I don't know if he said it to TMZ, whoever he said it to, maybe he was doing a podcast, but he really thinks that the college football season is in doubt, the NFL season too. It's hard to argue at this point. How are they ever going to have, first of all, a situation where guys aren't still potentially infecting each other? And how are you ever going to have fans in, you know, go to a game? How's that ever going to be possible until this passes or until we get a vaccine or some sort of treatment that's widely available?
I just don't know it. So Herbie said he thinks, has he heard or he's just kind of guessing?
No, he's guessing.
Yeah, he's all guessing.
Yeah, everyone's guessing. Nobody knows. But, I mean, think about it. You can't, if you own a large venue, you can't have 50,000, 60,000 people come anytime soon.
No, I'm expecting that when we get sports, we'll just do it without fans, which is something we could talk about today. LeBron James has basically gone on record and said he's not interested in doing that, essentially.
LeBron's got to get over it. He's got to get over it.
But his point is, if you're not playing in front of fans, then what's the point of even playing? And I would say that there's plenty of people that need a release at home,
probably. Yeah, you're playing in front of 10 million fans watching at home.
Yeah, and the TV ratings would be through the roof, and the TV contracts are already astronomical.
He hasn't thought that through. It's sort of a bizarre take. Kind of a selfish take, too, but that's fine. You know, whatever. He's working his way through it. But even still, I'm not sure how owners of teams could say, because, again, you're going to be in a situation where you get a Rudy Gobert, where you get one guy test positive, because it is a virus, and we're all, you know, vulnerable to getting viruses. You're going to have to shut it down again.
Well,
so I just don't know how you could restart.
And I'm kind of rhetorically asking this, because I know you don't know the answer. Nobody does. But this pandemic right now, this virus is kind of raging war on society, obviously.
Yeah.
If and when we get through the summer and the curve flattens and the numbers dwindle, I mean, will this just be like the cold or the flu where it's here forever? And do we always
until
treat
we get
it
a vaccine?
Right, but there's no quote unquote vaccine for the flu. Like, you get a shot, but you still get the flu. The cold, there's nothing for the cold. I mean, there's no vaccine for the cold. Is it just here forever? And then we just have to put it in the same category eventually as one of those things that you could possibly get? Or
well,
how does
obviously
it work?
I'm not a doctor, but the doctors, like Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci and all these guys, seem to think that they will have a vaccine that will take care of this.
Got you.
And I don't know if it'll be a separate vaccine or if it'll be, you know, put into the flu vaccine. I mean, we have the flu vaccine and we still get the flu, but that's because there's various mutations of it. And if you, in theory, I think, if like I had the flu and I had the flu shot, but in theory, if you have a flu shot and you still get another version of the flu, it shouldn't be as bad, as if you didn't have a flu shot. Right.
Right.
So
it sounds to me like then are you team, if you're saying you buy Herbie's thought that maybe football's in jeopardy.
I really think it is.
So then you don't think there's any way we get a baseball season at all.
I don't know how you're going to do it. I mean, the only way that I think the first way you do it, you ease into it with no fans, obviously, but you're still going to have the issue of guys congregating together. First of all, infecting each other, just in the locker room and hanging out and traveling and, you know, hugging and high-fiving and all that. and then infecting each other when they play games. You know, maybe in baseball it's not going to be quite as rampant, but I would think in basketball, I would think, you know, in football where so many body fluids are exchanged, it's going to be impossible to avoid. I don't know how we're going to be able to get back into this, into sports, and I worry about it for my son. You know, my son already had his spring season nuked for lacrosse in college, right? He played six games. They have fall ball where, you know, you restart, get back into it. I don't know how they're going to do that. And then, you know, unless they have the vaccine, next spring could be. And I don't have the heart to tell them this.
Yeah.
But I don't even, you know, they're saying 12 to 18 months on a vaccine. Well, that puts next spring in jeopardy. I mean, this is a disaster.
Oh, in so many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everything's affected. Many people listening are getting less work and being paid fewer amounts than they were before. I mean, it is a debacle across the board.
it's unbelievable. The good, there are silver linings, though. I mean, I think obviously the fact that we all get to spend time with family.
Yes.
You know, it gives that a priority. Again, it's kind of a reminder. You know, we can't be on our phones all the time. We've got to check in with each other. But, you know, I do believe we'll all get through it. But I do think that the new normal is going to be weird. You know, I was listening to the guy that does the Bar Rescue Show. What's that guy's name? John Taffer. Yeah, John Taffer. He thinks, I think it was John Taffer that said it. He thinks movie theaters are going to be the big industry that really suffers because you're not going to be able to jam-pack people into a movie theater anymore.
Yeah, when's the next time you're going to do that?
Yeah, and that some of the movie theater executives are saying what they're going to do is reconfigure theaters and have them in sit like two together in space, maybe some four together in space, two together in space, so like family sits together, and then they're just going to focus on food service to try to make up the revenue that way. But you're not going to have 1,000 people in a theater anymore.
Yeah, my hope, and I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing here. I'm not going to sit here and tell you everything will be back to normal in 2 weeks. My hope is that we are right now looking at this thing from the eye of the storm, and everything's at its worst.
I hope you're right.
You fast forward 6 or 9 months, and everything is a lot more normal than we think, and we're kind of back, not all the way. I don't know that we'll ever be back to pre-COVID-19 coronavirus form, but more so than we're expecting, where there was some type of a baseball tournament season thing that happened where football is launching in the fall. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm not as confident as I was when this whole thing started, but I definitely think in the moment we're going to be a little bit less rational than will be in time. So we'll see. EB and GP today. If you've got a name for our little program here, you can tweet us at EB Junkies and at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter. You're listening to The Fan. Alongside Eric Bickle, I'm Grant Paulson. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan on this Sunday. So, EB, it looks like you got a pretty good setup there. You're TV ready for your NBC Sports Washington show with the Junks.
Right.
You got the nice the leather seat and the couch. You got the lighting done.
Yeah.
You could stay in that there studio you've set up for a little
Believe
while.
Believe me, I'm trying to make it look as nice as I can so that, you know, there's never an issue in the future if I ever need
right.
to do this. But I like this. I get a kick out of this, to be honest with you. I'm a photography buff, so I have a lot of these lights, and I've been playing with them the last few days. The other guys, they don't have it doesn't interest them as much. I mean, they want it to look decent, but they don't care. But I'm like after the show tweaking, I'm ordering lights, I've got umbrellas in here. I'll tweet
Do
a photo.
Do you really have umbrellas set up?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
I'll tweet a photo right now and people can see what my setup is. It's pretty sick.
At EB Junkies, go check it out.
Yeah, yeah, because I love this kind of thing. And I'm actually disappointed that there's no visual element to what you and I are doing. But, you know, maybe we could do something.
Well, what you were doing initially years and years ago was ahead of the curve, too. Because I remember this was back when I was first at The Fan. It was probably even before I was a beat reporter of the Skins. Because I started doing that in 2010, and I was with the station in 2009 in some lesser capacities. But I remember I would be in studio occasionally doing different tasks. And you would be setting up little, like, clip-on cameras to your laptops or in front of you.
Yeah.
I mean, you were trying to do basically, like, watch the Junkies streaming before that was being done in a lot of places. That was 11 years ago now.
Yeah, I love doing that. And I had cameras for all the guys. I was buying little web cameras, and I had them for them. And I had a little camera switcher program on my MacBook. And, you know, I dug that. And then eventually it blossomed into – that was when, like, live stream was cool. I don't think it was quite 10 or 11 years ago. It might have been 7 or 8 or 9.
Okay, so maybe it was
in that in that realm. But, I don't even know. Does live stream even exist anymore? That website?
Yeah, I don't hear about it much. Yeah, I don't think so.
Everything now is like – well, obviously Zoom. Can you imagine? I wish we had stock in Zoom.
Dude, 2 months ago, I wish a little birdie would have started chirping to me about Zoom.
Yeah, I mean, Zoom is exploding. Periscope, I thought, was dead, but that seems to be kind of making a revival. Obviously, people are Facebook Living, Instagram Living, and all of that. So, look, I love it. I love that kind of stuff. Here, I'm kind of distracted. I can't multitask here. I'm going to try to tweet. I'll tweet out a picture maybe in the next break of my little setup here. But I don't know. When you and Danny do the show, are you guys connected visually?
No, not typically. So people have asked, like, how do you know when he's going to stop talking? I mean, you know this from doing the show with the guys for 20-plus years.
Yeah.
You pretty much can predict how they feel about topics, what they're going to say.
You know when they're going to jump in.
Exactly. Their cadence or when they'll be interested or not. So,
especially with two people.
Yes, it's much easier. Four people is really a problem.
I think with four or five, and then we like to get the producers involved too, it really is helpful to have that visual element.
Yeah, I think you need that.
I just can't believe that, you know, if you go back to that segment where I slept on Corona for about 6 weeks, from January till whenever, middle of February. I mean, believe me, I was watching it, but I was trying not to be panicked. And then as I saw it growing and growing and growing, and then what was happening in Europe, then I went on the air and I had my feet, and I was like, "This now it's on. I'm full-blown panicked." It was the middle of February, whatever. I tweeted the segment, and the guys were mocking me, but I can't believe that I didn't then make the next leap and go, well, I need to call my broker, and we need to protect some of my assets here.
Yeah.
It never occurred to me for even 1 second to do that.
But do you...
And we've gotten destroyed in the market. Everyone has.
Everyone is getting...
Everyone.
You more so than a lot of us.
No, percentage-wise, it's all the same.
Well, I understand that, yes, but if you're just talking about numbers. But yeah, to your point, I think a lot of people were... starting to get worried. I mean, you were in a different realm than I think a lot of people. But even in your case, for you not to have thought about that is interesting. But I don't think people anticipated, like, that the entire world, as it were, would kind of shut down. And there would actually be states not allowing people to leave their homes unless they're going to work. And countries that were locked down. I don't think people saw it that way. I still remember sitting in Bethesda after the first three people in Maryland, in Montgomery County, were diagnosed, and I think they'd all traveled together. It was kind of a quirky thing, and at that point, there had been 9 or 7 deaths in the country, and they were all at that same old folks' home in Washington State.
Yeah.
And I remember with Brent Johnson and Jordan Giorgio, the people I work with on TV, and a couple of our producers sitting around, and I'm going, all right, let's go around the room. 1 to 100, your level of concern about this.
Yeah.
And everyone was pretty low, and their point was, I mean, a handful of people have died, which is sad. But, like, you think about it. We had I shouldn't say only because it's terrible. There's lives that are lost. But you, in the grand scheme of things, had about 1,000 people die between whenever this began and all the hysteria. And the last month in the last 2 days. And then in the last 2 days, that number have died.
It's doubled.
It's doubled from 1,000 to 2,000 in the span of, like, 40 hours.
Yeah, it took 3 weeks to go from 0 to 1,000. And it took 2 days to go from 1,000 to 2,000. And that's what's so scary about this whole friggin' thing is until we really steady this. And I do think that the social distancing and all this stuff, I mean, it has to help.
Yes,
I mean, Times Square is empty.
Flattened.
I mean, it has to. We're just not seeing it yet. But that's what's so scary about that lily pad example that I keep talking about on the air that I heard a few months ago where, you know, you start out in a pond. Have you heard this example before, Grant?
No.
You say, so there's one lily pad in the pond. The next day, there's two, right? Then the third, it keeps doubling, right? And the third day, there's four. And then the fifth day, there's 8. And then the sixth day, there's 16, right? And then day 49, the whole pond is covered in lily pads. And then do you know when it was half covered? Day 48, right? That it's just, when you think about it that way, it's kind of mind-blowing, the exponential growth.
Yeah, the one I heard was something, and I don't remember the number of days, but it's a crazy low number of days, basically. Like, if you double your money every day starting at a penny, when do you get to $1 billion?
Right.
And it's like a couple months. You know, it's like it takes no time, basically.
Well, anybody that's ever played blackjack and has said, okay, I'm going to double up every time I lose and realizes you're going busto in, you know, like five hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
By the way, when's the last time you've done a weekend show?
Dude.
In your career?
Well, for pregame stuff, right?
I'm thinking just like this, like not a game day, not a sponsored thing where they want the junks and they're paying some cash.
Probably, you know, JP would be better at this than I. So we started about 95, 96, probably like 96, 97, something like that.
Really? Because I would imagine your first on-air shows were probably weekend shows.
First on-air show. I won't bore people with details because I know that the P1s that are probably listening, they know the deal. But so we did the cable access show.
Yep.
We sent out, after we did it for a year, we sent out tapes to three critics. We said, let's send out tapes to like some media guys and maybe they'll get a kick out of it and maybe like, you know, a radio station will call us or something and or a TV station at the time, Comcast might call us and maybe we can do it there. And we sent one to Rudy Martsky at USA Today.
I remember him, yeah.
We sent one to Leonard Shapiro at the Washington Post. And then we sent one to Dick Heller at the Washington Times. Lenny and Rudy didn't acknowledge it really at all. Dick loved it, wrote a great piece about it. I'll never forget when he called and he said he loved the story and he interviewed us and he wrote the piece and I knew it was coming out on that Saturday morning. I remember walking out to my driveway to pick up the Washington Times to see the article, and Jimmy McClure and Jeremy Coleman, who were the assistant program director and program director at WJFK, read the article that morning and called me, I don't know, by like 10 a.m.
Oh, wow.
And said, we just acquired rights to broadcast the Redskin games on the weekend, and we need programming to surround it. And would you guys be interested in coming in and just talking? And we went in there, we got our ties on, and we dressed up and everything, and we didn't know anything. And they liked our
show. You could wear a hoodie and sweatpants, yeah.
Right. I didn't know you could wear like your old Expos hat. And so, long story short, they said, you want to just do a couple hours on the air this Saturday? And we're like, what? And we went, and that was like our first thing. We like, did it live on air. And they said, that didn't suck. You want to come back next week? And we said, sure. And so we did that. And then we did that for about a year or so before the Grease Man got fired. And then we took over. Yeah, so it was probably 1996 is the last time we were regular. But that was so much fun because they were just starting. So Earl was there at the beginning. Do you remember Dan Daly? Dan Daly was a super talented guy who's still in the area. He used to write for the Washington Times.
Yeah, long time.
But for whatever reason, I think Dan just got, I don't know, maybe frustrated by it. I think he wanted to, he just wanted to progress quicker than they were willing to. But Dan could have been a star on radio, I thought. He was really, really talented. Rich the Coach Gilgallon, do you remember Rich?
I don't know Rich, no.
You don't remember? So you don't remember the old days of Kylie and the Coach or any of that?
I do. Well, I know them because they went to another market. But, like, what you're talking about is, like, that 95 to 98. I pretty much, when I tuned in and started, I mean, I was less than 10. So, like, 98, 99 is kind of when I was around 10 years old. That's when I started listening. That's when I first met you guys out at FedEx. And that's when I was kind of plugged in at that point.
Were we doing a pregame show at FedEx?
Yes, you were.
And you came, because I don't remember it.
We were drunk during all those shows, by the way.
Right.
I was on your pregame show. So JP, and now that I know you guys, it all makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah. Like
the actual roles you were playing and the characters haven't changed.
Yeah.
Like JP came up. My dad used to drive me to all the games because I was 10 years old. So like we were in the parking lot doing some event or something, and JP came up to us and like, hey, like shook our hands, introduced himself. We're the Junkies. Would you want to come on the postgame show after the game today? And I was like, yeah, no problem. He's like, all right, we're in the club level. Come on down. So it was you, JP, and I think Cakes. I don't think Bish was there. Maybe just the two of you. I remember you two specifically. But, yeah, so I went, met you guys, did that. And then that was the first time I had kind of been on air with you guys. And from that point forward, I was hooked to listening all the time and everything like that. But that was around 99.
No, we were legitimately drunk during those shows.
I believe
we were on the club level, and they would give us free drinks, and we drank throughout. I mean,
it was amazing.
So I have no recollection of you coming on the pregame show. But I want you to tell your story because I don't think you tell it enough about sort of how you got started. Maybe we can do it when we come back.
Okay.
You know, we get into some of the Redskins stuff and Trent Williams, and I know you guys had an amazing interview with the agent and all that. But I think you should tell your story, because I think it's fascinating about how you got started and how you were getting shipped up there to do Letterman periodically.
Yeah.
You know, and you tweeted a picture, I think, was it this morning or yesterday, when you were doing stuff like with Frank Herzog. So I think your story is fascinating. I don't think people quite understand it.
All right, yeah, we could do that, absolutely. Kind of just hanging out until noon with you guys today on The Fan. If you want to call in, you got a thought or a question, it is the equivalent of an open line Thursday or an open line Friday, depending on the show that you listen to. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Eric and Grant with you on The Fan. Bickle and Paulson, Sunday on 106.7 The Fan. Much appreciate you guys listening. Know you got plenty going on today. Take us with you via radio.com. If you're out and about social distancing and or getting things done around the house, can you listen to us via Amazon Alexa or a Google Home, whatever you got. By the way, I was thinking about this. You know, you have been in the game way longer than I have, as kind of one of the OGs now in the market. But I'll tell you, this pandemic, like 10, 12, 13, 15 years ago, would have really pummeled radio in a way that, look, like every industry, we're going to be worse off right now. There's no denying that. But we can better withstand this based on the fact that people do stream on their computers, that radio.com exists, that people can listen on Alexa and Google Home. Like, there was a time when you guys were doing shows pre-G&D when you were just kind of cooked, because it's either you're in the car listening or you're not listening at all.
Right.
And hopefully, my fingers are crossed here, but hopefully we're going to be okay, because there are a lot of ways that people can still get our content now.
Well, absolutely. I mean, content is king. It doesn't matter how you get it. You know, there are so many ways that people could get it now, too, that if you're a good content provider, I think you're going to be okay, and we're lucky that way. But, I mean, think about it. It's incredible. There are so many people that are just putting content out there on YouTube Live, or, you know, obviously radio.com for us has been huge. Podcasts. We were way – our station was way ahead of the curve on the podcasting deal. And I give a lot of credit to CK on that. I mean, he could tell you better than I could. But we've been podcasting our show for well over a decade. So, luckily, I think that we'll be okay. As long as our company can stay afloat, we'll be able to still provide the listeners with good content and kind of keep them distracted and entertained.
Yeah, that's the hope. That's the plan for sure. If you guys want to call us, you can. 800-636-1067 is the number, 800-636-1067. I can get into my story a little bit as we continue at some point today.
I don't know how much
people are interested in
it. I am. Your uncle was a broadcaster, right?
So, yeah, I'll give you the cliff notes. So my uncle was a pretty legendary radio guy in Pittsburgh. It was kind of like what you guys are here, I would say. He was more of, you know, an Elliot in the Morning, because he had a background. It was a rock station called WDVE. So he would start and stop, you know, music and get into basically a DJ, right? So he's introducing songs. But he was ultra talented and still is. Really, really good on air, and a lot of different roles that he's had. But essentially he did voices. He did characters. It was like old guy talk radio on a rock station with music. And he beat Stern in Pittsburgh and was like a legend there. We'd go out to dinner. People would come up to the table, that kind of deal. And so I always thought that was really cool. As a diehard sports fan, though, all I cared about as a kid was sports. You know, I used to study the games really, really closely. Well, I remember we got into a huge debate one time at like a family picnic about the Steelers and the Redskins, like a preseason scrimmage they had had. So I don't know if you remember, EB, but the Skins used to like have – they'd bring the Steelers basically to like training camp.
Yeah.
And like – do like a legit scrimmage that was televised. And I remembered a bunch of the stats and the score from those games from the last couple of years. And like, he was just like blown away and thought it was ridiculous. Well, for years and years, my grandma, his mom, this was my uncle, used to go on his show and pick football games as a bit. And she didn't know anything about football, but she'd make her picks. So after she passed away, he wasn't doing that anymore. And he's like, you know, I'm going to look up some of these numbers. And if you're actually right about them, like, I think in his mind, he's like, you could be the bit picker now. You could be, you know, this 8-year-old kid. So he called me at the time. I was like 9, his sports bookie. And I would come on. I would give him the lines. I would tell him who to pick, recite some stats, you know, a bunch of stuff I would write down beforehand and go on. And I didn't think much of it, but I remember the first couple times doing it, recording it, thinking it was the coolest thing in the world, but I didn't know it would lead to anything. So I start doing that. Long story short, the local newspaper writes a story about it in King George. The bigger newspaper in Fredericksburg and the surrounding area, the Freelance Star, sees that, writes a story about it. And so now there's this, kind of growing, media about the fact that I have like a radio career. I don't have a radio career. I'm just a kid who calls in to his uncle's show, basically, and picks football games. But from that, Channel 9 in Washington, locally, at the time it was Ken Brew.
Yeah.
Called me. They came out to my school. They recorded a piece on me in fifth grade, like at recess. They're like, look, this kid now does football picks on the radio. I'd started the journal had asked me to write like 100 words a week on sports. So I started this quote unquote column where I wrote a couple paragraphs on DC sports very poorly. So then they did a story on that on Channel 9. Well, Channel 9 is a CBS affiliate. And one of Letterman's producers sees that and says, this is funny. Like, this kid talks sports and acts like he's a broadcaster and,
right,
has a strong opinion, so let's bring him on. So I would go on to Letterman over the next bunch of years, like, six times. I would go up there seven times. I got
Hold on, let's slow down. Let's do the first time. So you do Ken Brew, whatever. And still, you're young enough that I don't know if you quite realize the ramification of it,
100% did not.
Yeah, right. So to you, it's probably just like doing the Brew Show, but doing it up in New York.
Exactly.
So your family gets the call or whatever and says, hey, we want to kill a segment. We think Grant's really, really great. Would he be willing to come on? Explain to people sort of what that meant. Like, how did you get up there?
Right. Okay, so they call the first time, and they ask if I could be up there the next night to tape because someone had canceled.
Right.
Okay, I don't remember who it was. It was a big name, though. I remember that. It was a comedian, I think.
Yeah.
So someone had canceled, and they had this open spot, and they're like, look, we've been seeing some of the videos and some of the things circulating. We like this idea. Would you be able to come up here? And they were asking my dad. It wasn't like asking me. Like, could you get him up here? Would he want to do it? So my dad asked me, he's like, do you want to go on the Letterman show to talk about sports? I kind of knew what that was. Like, I knew it was a show that my dad watched at night. I didn't know much more than that. So I said, yeah, no doubt. And he's like, okay, cool. So the first time we went, because we thought it would be the only time that I was ever going on the show, my entire family came.
Right.
So that's two older brothers, a younger sister, and both my parents.
And how'd you get up there?
So we drove because they were going to fly me up there, but they're not going to fly up six people.
Yeah.
So we pile into what was a Aerostar blue, like your typical long van for a big family. We pile into that. We go up to New York. They got us a hotel room at the Le Parker Meridian on 57th. Nice hotel. And we got
– Sweet hotel.
Sweet hotel. They take care of their people. And so we got the joining room. I think my dad probably picked that up. So, like, we were in – it was, like, my parents in one room and, like, the kids in another room, right? Like, bringing the extra beds and stuff.
Amazing.
Like, yeah, it was fun. So we go up to New York to do this. My parents, obviously, are telling all my uncles and aunts all over the country and – everyone's pretty jacked up about it. I had no idea how big of a deal it was or how many people would be watching. And for that reason, people are always like, oh, you had to be so nervous. Not nervous at all because you don't know what's at stake.
Yeah.
You don't know that if you say something wrong, you're on YouTube for the rest of your life. I just thought this is fairly normal. I talked to Ken Brew. I've, done this thing on the radio before on my phone. Like, what's different about it? So, yeah, so the first time I went up, Kristen Davis from Sex and the City was the main star guest that night. And I've told this story once, but we got out of the limo. They come get you at the hotel. They bring you over. They tape it like 5:30 in the afternoon as if it's live. So basically, like, they just go dark during the breaks. Otherwise, everything is done exactly live unless they have to edit something. And so we get out of the limo. My brother Ryan's the first guy out. And gated off on either side, there's people hanging over these railings with magazine covers wanting her to sign autographs and stuff.
Right.
And we get out of the limo, and they're like, who the hell is that? Like, who are these people? Where's Kristen Davis?
Yeah.
But so that night, I met her. She was awesome. I had my own dressing room with, like, the Rupert G's Deli sent up a bunch of subs.
Did you take a picture? Did they have your name? Did they say Grant Paulson on the door?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've got all that stuff. It said my name on the door and everything.
Yeah, you got to have that.
We thought it would be the only time, and I went on, and, everybody in the audience is laughing constantly, and I'm thinking that they're laughing at the things I'm saying. You look back, and they're kind of, I won't say laughing at you, no one's being mean, but they're laughing because
Dave's making it funny.
Right, it's like a dog doing a trick, I'm like a kid trying, in my mind I'm going, man, I'm really killing, they're loving my content here. But he liked it, afterwards, he came up to me before I left, and he said, "Hey, I just want you to know." He's like, "That was a great segment, and we're going to have you back." And I said, "Wow, well, thank you so much." And now, again, I'm thinking this is something he does for everyone. And when he walked away, the producer said, "I want you to know, like, I've never seen him do that. Like,
right.
He doesn't talk to anyone. And if he said that, I guarantee you, you're actually going to be back."
Wow.
I was like, okay, well, that's cool. And I ended up going on six times between when I was 10 years old and 17 years old, and I wasn't cute or funny anymore.
Yeah, did they tell you this is probably it?
No, but I knew it was probably it. Like, when I went up at, like, 17, so the last time I went up was kind of a make-good. Like, a few months earlier, I'd gone up and gotten bumped.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the same thing. Like, they would have someone cancel, and you got to get up there and be the fill-in. Well, that was the one time that they called me in the morning to be there that night. So literally I get a call. This was probably my junior year of high school or maybe sophomore year of high school. And they're like, "Hey, can you be here tonight? We just had a cancellation." And I'm like, they're calling me now at this point. And I'm like, I got to see if my dad can get me to the airport. Like, I'll let you know. So I call him. He leaves work. We leave at like 10:30 to go to National. They book us a flight. We're on the plane. We don't go to the hotel, straight to Ed Sullivan Theater, like 4 right. o'clock for the taping, go into our little room. Well, there's you know, all these dudes wandering around in the hallway. And I'm sitting in my, quote-unquote, dressing room with all my fruits and cookies and sandwiches and everything. And these familiar faces are walking by. I'm like, damn, I noticed that guy. I know that guy. Well, the one that tipped me off finally was Ozzie Smith, okay? Mm. Ozzie Smith walks by my dressing room. And I'm like, Dad, that's Ozzie Smith. My dad's not a huge sports fan at all. I wouldn't even say he's a big sports fan, but he's like, Ozzie Smith. I'm like, the old Cardinal, the wizard, the one that did the flip? He's like, So we're like looking it up on our phones. We're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, Dad, that's, you know, so-and-so. And it turns out there's these baseball Hall of Famers there, and I don't know what's going on. So within a few minutes, Brooks Robinson walks into the room, literally, walks into my dressing room. And even though my dad's not a huge fan, he grew up in Baltimore, and that is a guy he recognizes and loved. And he goes, Brooks Robinson. He's like, yeah, how you doing? You mind if I sit here? They didn't have anywhere to sit. We're like, no problem. So he sits on my couch, and he's like signing some waiver. We're like, what's going on? He's like, oh, we're doing the top 10 tonight, the top 10 reasons, best things about being in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. There's 10 of us here. No kidding. He's like, yeah, that's why we're all just kind of outside. I was like, well, bring them in. So you guys got nowhere to be. I got couches. So they come into my room, and it's him and Ralph Kiner and Bob Gibson and Ozzie Smith and Bob Feller. I mean, some of the biggest names in the history of baseball. This is not a bit. And they're all now sitting in this room on the couch with me and my dad sharing stories. Raleigh Fingers.
Are you taking pictures? Is your dad taking pictures?
So this was a little bit before, like, pictures. I don't even know if we had, like, picture phones, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
This, I got autographs. There was nothing to get autographs. I asked someone, I'm like, can you go get me a baseball? They didn't have one.
Yeah.
So, like, I got, like, a napkin or a piece of paper signed by all these guys. But I'm pretty sure, because if you had camera phones now, I'd have selfies with all those guys.
Right.
I bet you it was, like, this was like 04, 05. So anyway, so these guys are all in my room now hanging out telling stories. So I'll to end this as quick as I can. So their top 10 list that night went so long. Letterman is a massive sports fan, okay? Huge sports fan. He was completely enamored with these guys. So it was planned for like 2 minutes, and it went like 4.5. He was following up with everyone. And so I get bumped completely. He just has a blast talking to these Hall of Famers. There's no time for me. So they come up, and they're very apologetic, and they go, listen, this never happens. We called you this afternoon. We're so sorry. You did everything you could to get up here. We'll take care of you. Whatever you want to do in the city tonight, we got connections. You tell us where you want to go. We'll get you tickets. So, like, in my dad's mind, he's thinking, like, we could go to the best Broadway show, the nicest dinner. So I was like, the Orioles are at Yankee Stadium. Like, can we get over there? Like, yeah, we get you tickets. No problem. So the crappy Orioles, led by Jay Gibbons, are at Yankee Stadium, and I rode over to the game in a car with Gary Carter, the late Gary Carter, the catcher. He was going to the game with his daughter as well. And they got us tickets in the loge, and we sat and we watched the Orioles at Yankee Stadium. But they felt so bad that they bumped me that they promised me, we'll bring you back. And that was the last time when they brought me back. This was now right before the start of the school year, probably my junior year or something in the summer. Going into the fall to like
at that point
NFL
you know
season.
It's pretty big though at that point
absolutely by then I know what time I go on a lot comes from it and everyone at school thinks it's like the craziest thing in the world. When I first did it, like, the parents of all of my friends would like talk to me about it, but none of the kids got it,
right?
But yeah, by the end of the run, it was a big deal for sure.
Right, that's a cool story, dude. Very cool.
It's a good time. I mean, I should say it was a good time. And the best thing for me as someone, like, I'm like you, I love celebrities. Like, that part of entertainment. Meeting like LL Cool J, coolest guy in the world. Joaquin Phoenix was one of the weirder guys I'd met ever. Yeah. But Kristen Davis and Julian Moore and like all these people, each time I went up there that were starring, and we'd be side by side in these rooms, so you're kind of interacting with them. Really, really neat.
Yeah, definitely, dude. What, quite a life. And look at you. Look at you now.
Yeah, sitting in my basement talking to my guy EB. Eric and Grant on 106.7 The Fan. EB, yesterday, I always kind of try to look over what's on TV to get a feel for D.C. sports. And I saw that if I wanted some D.C. sports yesterday, the first thing that was going to be televised was going to be Max Scherzer's 20-strikeout game. ESPN did a neat thing where they televised all the 20-strikeout games in succession. And Scherzer last night at 6 p.m. for the Nats against the Tigers was one of the games that they aired. I'll tell you that I distinctly remember being at that game where I was sitting. I went as a fan. It was actually a buddy of mine's birthday. And so like 20-some of us went to the game and had tickets all over the ballpark. So I was sitting in the outfield in the first row, basically in right center field. And it wasn't really until the fifth or sixth inning that we knew we might be seeing something awesome. But you can make the case that seeing a 20-strikeout game is cooler and a bigger deal than seeing a no-hitter, maybe even than a perfect game in terms of the number of them that have ever happened. By far the coolest thing I've ever seen live at a sporting event. And the fact that he did it against the top team as well made it that much more special for him, I'm sure.
Right. I'm trying to think. So I have the no-hitter that I saw. I saw Wilson Alvarez when he threw no-hitter against the Orioles. I was at that at Memorial Stadium. I think that was 1991. I had to look it up. I'm trying to think of some. I've had a bunch of Maryland games, you know, when I was a student there in the late 80s and early 90s. But they all kind of blend in to me. I remember the streak, obviously. I was at all of the home games. But when Walt had the 7 straight 30-point games when he had just gotten contacts, that was a big deal. And then I know this sounds kind of corny, but the Strasburg debut, I'm sure you were at that. Were you at the Strasburg?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is just a big one for me. And, I just went there with my brother, and we were hanging out just drinking on the concourse level or whatever. Just a spectacular debut. We'd been following this guy since he was in college, and to see him come up and just perform that way, right? I mean, it's just – I'll never forget that game.
Yeah, that game was the first time as a D.C. sports fan, and I grew up an Orioles fan like everybody else did, where I thought I could kind of see baseball being huge in D.C.
Right.
Because before that, RFK was a dump.
Yeah.
And everyone there was in a shirt and tie and just got off work in the city and was reading books and doing crossword puzzles. It was a terrible place to see a game. Nats Park opened in 08, and opening night with Zim hitting the walk-off home run against Atlanta was awesome. But when you saw the Strasburg circus come to town and the excitement and the energy and the packed house and people on their feet with 2 strikes screaming at the top of their lungs for every punch out. And he had a 7-inning, 14-strikeout masterpiece that night against the Pirates. He thought, this is maybe a sign of what is to come here. This could be what this looks like. Now, I didn't see it again until really the Nats made the playoffs for the first time in 2012, but you knew it was possible.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's what was amazing about that.
Well, it's what won me over. I mean, I've told the story many, many times. I mean, I grew up as a Cubs fan. My father was a Cubs fan. We go every summer. I moved to Maryland when I was 3, but every summer we go to Wrigley Field. But eventually, you know, I got won over by the Orioles. And I was an Orioles fan because we would go to Orioles games every year, and I'd read about the Orioles every day in the paper. And then the strike, and then Angelos, and then just disappointment after disappointment. Your enthusiasm for the Orioles start to fade. But I didn't adopt the Nats when they came into town because, as you say, I felt no affinity for it. The RFK thing seemed to be weird to me. It wasn't until Bryce and Strauss, came to town, and then all of a sudden, I just... You know, people say, well, how do you do that? How do you abandon the Orioles for the Nats? It just happens naturally. I don't know. How do people divorce their wives? I mean, you fall out of love. I mean, I don't know. It just happens. And from then on, I've just been a massive fan. But the first few years, how many years was it from when they got to D.C. to when Bryce and Strauss arrived?
So they come to D.C. in 05.
Right.
Strasburg's debut was 2010, and right. Bryce's was after that.
Yeah, so it took 5 years. So. It took 5 years for me.
Yeah, little by little, kind of chipping away probably as you would go to those games. Also, it's just easier. It's more convenient. You get off the metro. You're right there.
I don't think I went to a game at RFK.
Really? Not one?
I wasn't into it.
I mean, I'll tell you, you didn't miss much. But, oof, was that just a – it was a brutal place to watch baseball.
Right.
And I'm glad that it happened because it meant baseball was in D.C.
Right.
But now that you've got Nationals Park and you know, an environment for the game, football was played at RFK forever, and that's what was meant to be played there. And
right.
baseball was not. They just you – know, I understand that it was played there initially, but everything was reconvened, and it was pretty ugly. The question for you guys at 800-636-1067, we'll take some of your calls on this, 800-636-1067. So they aired Max Scherzer's 20-strikeout game last night on ESPN, and I was at that game. It is by far, as of this moment, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of sports games I've been to, the game that I would say is the biggest accomplishment of any player or the coolest thing I saw. For a lot of people, maybe that is a no-hitter. Sounds like that's your answer, maybe.
I don't know. You know, we're completely ignoring the Nats run, like when Soto had the hit, right?
Yeah, I guess if we're just saying, like, big moments. But I'm thinking about, like, accomplishments individually. So, like
a record-breaking day.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Things that you saw happen that very few people can claim. Like, that was awesome that Soto had that hit. But every team's had that big hit at some point in a wild card game.
Yeah.
The Scherzer 20-strikeout game is one of, you can count them on one hand, that have ever happened in the history of the sport.
Right.
Right. One guy's done it twice, a couple of other guys did it, and then Max Scherzer. Like, that's the entire list.
Right.
If you saw a no-hitter or a perfect game, that'd be up there. Maybe like a 3 or 4 homer game. But every time you go, that's what I love about sports, you could see something crazy. Most of the time you don't. But that night, it was kind of an inconvenience to even have to follow the game. I was there with like 20 friends for a birthday party, and next thing you know, Max has like 9 strikeouts a few innings in, and I'm going, well, wait a second. What is going on here? Next thing you know, he punches out 20.
Right.
I'll remember that forever. I still got that ticket stub. Now, what's the game you would save the ticket stub from? I guess it's a question. EB Grant with you right here on 106.7.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.